Welcome to the First Century Church Podcast. My name is Stephen Wilhoy, and I'm the lead pastor at First Century Church, and it is an honor to have you with us today. The goal of the podcast is simple. We want you to be encouraged, challenged, and inspired to go further in your faith than ever before. If you'd like more information about the church, you can visit our website, firstcenturykc.com. And if you happen to be in the Kansas City area anytime soon, we'd love to have you join us for one of our live gatherings to connect with you in person. Again, thanks for joining us today, and we hope that you enjoy today's message. We're going to continue our series, Wisdom for Life, that we have been on now. This is week 8 of this series. Hard to believe it's been 2 months, basically, but here we are. And we're at the end of James chapter 3. So this series is just going through the book of James, which is a letter written by the younger half-brother of Jesus Christ. And so we're looking at really truths and ideas that will practically enhance and strengthen our lives of faith as we aim to live them out. And we're trying to be very practical here with this. And I think especially the next couple of weeks will very much be so. That way. So if the series is called Wisdom for Life, the theme is obviously going to be wisdom throughout every week, even if it's not overtly mentioned. We've already spent, week 3 was overtly about wisdom. We talked a lot about that. And so we'll spend the next couple of weeks, James revisits this issue or subject of wisdom here at the end of James chapter 3. And so we will be here at just 5 verses. We'll take 2 weeks to talk about 2 different aspects of wisdom that he highlights here in James 3. And so we will jump right into reading the text that we'll read this week and next week, and then see what James has to tell us today about wisdom for life. So join me today in James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. If you have your Bible, you can turn there. It's on your YouVersion Bible app on your phone if you have that, or you can follow on the screens as well. So James 3, verse 13, here's what he says. If you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere, and those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. So what we've seen here in just these few short verses as James really focuses on wisdom is he shows us a stark contrast, a juxtaposition of what wisdom really is not and what it is. It's 2 different ways to see the world and operate in the world. It's 2 very different ways to see people and interact with people. It's really 2 different types of wisdom. And so we'll look at both of these the next 2 weeks on these 2 different types of wisdom. And today we'll start sort of with the bad news first. We'll get that out of the way. So next week will be a little bit more hippity-hoppity, you know, that kind of, it's not Easter, but I use those words anyway. Next week, a little bit more, maybe upbeat, but today's going to be very, I think, informational and helpful, maybe transformational as well. We're going to talk today about earthly wisdom, the kind of wisdom that, or I put it in air quotes, wisdom that James describes first that we'll look at is earthly wisdom. And as we'll see throughout our time today, this is the way that the world apart from Jesus tries to work. But as we'll see, it shows why the world apart from Jesus doesn't work. It's how it tries to work, but it doesn't work. And so James, I've got a list here. There's really these 4 main categories that we'll work through today to show us what James is talking about as we go throughout earthly wisdom. It's these 4 things he lists: bitter jealousy, selfish ambition, boasting and lying, and he calls it unspiritual and even demonic. So that's what we're going to look at today. So there's your outline for this morning. I don't always do it that way. It just kind of worked out. So here we go. So let's look at the first description of earthly wisdom according to James. And he says it's bitter jealousy. So I think it's no secret that the default of every human heart, and therefore the way the world seems to work, is to size everyone up as our competition. We're constantly comparing ourselves to everyone and everything in our lives. And the order of the day is to just never be content with how things are. It's the world tries to desensitize us to that. It tries to suck the gratitude out of our hearts and our minds and our spirits. And that's really what marketing is. That's what advertising is. It's exactly that. Where you look at this thing that your neighbor has. Don't you want that thing or something even better? Call now and you can order it. You can have two of them for the price of one. That's what marketing does. You know, look at your neighbor's car. It's pretty nice and shiny. Look at your trash. Don't you want their nice shiny car? Go come get one today at 18% APR, you know. Or isn't your life terrible? Don't you want what everybody else has? You know, let's go into crippling debt to be extraordinary. Our culture conditions us to live this way in bitter jealousy. Even if we don't call it that or don't see it that way, maybe even if it doesn't creep all the way in our own hearts to that, that's what our culture pulls us toward. That's what we're being messaged all the time. Bitter jealousy. You got to have it better than them. You got to have what they have and more. That's just how we're conditioned. So I will say there's nothing wrong with having things or having nice things. That's not what James is saying. It's not what I'm saying, but just we need to be aware that the culture operating apart from the wisdom of Jesus is conditioning us who are followers of Jesus to this subtle jealousy. And we'll see in a couple weeks as we get into the beginning of James 4, really the dangerous outgrowth of what that bitter jealousy in our heart begins to look like. So that'll come in just a couple weeks. But one quick, easy biblical example of what this looks like is the story of Joseph in the book of Genesis. Right, it's bitter jealousy is exactly what got him where he ended up being, which in the end was good, but at first it wasn't so good, was it? So Joseph's brothers, his 11 older brothers, they become jealous of his favoritism. You know, he's the little kid brother, dad dotes on him the most. And then, of course, dad, kind of not learning from his father and grandfather before him who had this same kind of favoritism issue, gives him this coat of many colors, right? It's like, if you just want to plaster, he's my favorite, that's how you do it. And he put the coat on his poor little kid who, you know, he's a teenager, he doesn't know any better. And so they're jealous of his favoritism. But this bitter jealousy in their hearts grew and was so insidious that it actually began to affect everything about them. To where not only are they jealous of what they can see, they become literally jealous of his dreams at night. Because one day Joseph gets up and tells his brothers and father and mother, hey, I had a dream, and in my dream the sun and moon and 11 stars bowed down and worshiped me. Now, Kim has dreams all the time, and so usually when I get up first thing in the morning, while walking to the bathroom, she's getting ready, and I get to hear what dreams she had last night, okay? And sometimes they're very realistic, and there's people that she knows in them or places that she knows in them, and sometimes they're just totally off the wall. It doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's just, you know, she needs to stop eating whatever she's eating before bed, I guess. I don't know. But that's just how, so that's kind of how Joseph has worked. So when Joseph has this dream, he doesn't come in the morning and say, you know what, guys? I've got a life goal, and it's that you worship me. That's not what happens in the book of Genesis. If that were, you would understand why his brothers are not crazy about what he's saying. But he's just saying, hey, I had this dream, and he doesn't even, they read into what is actually real, what will happen in 20 or so years, but he's just giving them information. And so they end up selling him into slavery over this bitter jealousy just because of the dreams he had when he was asleep at night. It's sort of like if I told you, hey, I had a dream last night that I was the president of the United States, and your response is not, oh, that's interesting. Your response is, let's get him, guys. He wants to lord over us. That's how foolish his brothers are in this story. And so, but that it started with that bitter jealousy. What this does, well, the reason it's so dangerous, and as I said earlier, insidious, is that it keeps us from thinking clearly. It keeps us from seeing things as they really are. It keeps us from acting reasonably if we have this root of bitter jealousy that James is talking about. On an earthly view, it seems like that's the way to go. Bigger, better, faster, all that kind of stuff, more than them, that sort of thing. But that's why the world's wisdom doesn't work. That's why people are divided. That's why, as we'll see in a couple weeks in James 4, that's why we have quarreling. That's why we have fighting. That's why we have crime. The root of that, one of them at least, is bitter jealousy. So we want to avoid this earthly wisdom because that's one of the components of it. The next thing that's similar, that's connected, is this idea of selfish ambition. Selfish ambition. Now, when I see that, immediately I have to ask this question. Is James saying that ambition in and of itself is wrong? That having goals and dreams and things you want to accomplish are bad or sinful? You should stay away from having, you know, a life goal or these things you want to accomplish. That's not what he's saying. That word in front of ambition is the key that he's talking about. Selfish ambition. We know that ambition in and of itself is not wrong because that's how we explored the Western frontier. These people, you know, with like a wagon and 17 kids decided, I think we can make a way in the wilderness here. That's ambitious. And yet it's why we have the country that we do today. The same with exploring space. You got to be pretty ambitious to think, yeah, I can probably go up in space and float around and fly in a rocket to the moon. You have to be ambitious to do that. So ambition in and of itself is not the problem. It's the selfish ambition that is the issue. Even advances in technology and science come because someone was ambitious. There's a problem I'm trying to solve. I think I can figure out a way to solve this problem. And sometimes what's interesting is that some of those discoveries happen accidentally. To give you an example, we have a picture here of Charles Goodyear. You might recognize maybe not his first name, but you recognize his last name for sure. So Charles Goodyear was born in the year 1800, and he was involved even as a teenager in manufacturing. His father owned a manufacturing business even as a young boy, as a teenager. So when he grew up, he was 26 years old, married, young children. He moved to Philadelphia to open a hardware store. And for a couple of years, the business was really taking off. Things were going well. He was getting pretty well-to-do. And then suddenly, he had a lot of health issues in the late 1820s, and he had to shutter his business, and he was basically penniless and poor and destitute. But he was ambitious, and so he didn't give up. And so around 1831, after he kind of gets over his bout of sickness, he starts working with what they call natural rubber, what he called gum elastic. And what he tried to do for the next 7-8 years was find practical uses for this really useless thing. So he has ambition, but it's not selfless. He's trying to find reasons and ways to make it useful. So he tried to improve life preservers. Didn't quite work the way he thought at first. He tried to actually find, you know, rubber on the bottom of shoes. Maybe that'll be helpful. It didn't quite work because the gum was too sticky and it wasn't practical for use. But he was ambitious and didn't give up. So what he tried to do is, hey, how can I combine other things with this gum elastic to make it do what I think it can do? I think I can solve the problem. I think I can find a use for this material. And so he tried to mix it with different, even different gases, like he would gas himself out by accident in these experiments, you know, and it was kind of a dangerous thing. And so he's mixing this gum elastic with sulfur, and he's maybe making some progress. And what happens, the story goes, that as he's mixing these two things together, he drops it onto this hot stove. And so once he gets it up really quickly, he discovers that heat was the missing ingredient. When he mixed the sulfur and the gum elastic together and applied the proper heat, first it took away the sticky factor, so it made it practical. It also hardened and strengthened the rubber, which is the main thing, the main breakthrough that caused us to have the tires that we have today with his name printed on many of them. So this was called vulcanized rubber, and so it was live long and prosper was their motto. Aha, someone got that. So he was ambitious, but not in a selfish way. But here's how his story actually sort of tragically ends. He goes over to Europe in the 1850s, and he's made a pretty good name for himself. He's got the patents in the U.S. When he gets over to Europe, he discovers that another inventor has claimed to also have discovered how to vulcanize rubber, even though it seems like they just stole his ideas, right, his plan. So that he... In his ambition, he says, well, I'm going to try to fight this because this is my livelihood, this is my name, this is everything. So he fights this in the courts and loses, and actually Charles Goodyear dies penniless and a failure. It wasn't until 40 years after his death when someone else started this tire company that they named it after him, knowing that he was the reason that they have this vulcanized rubber to make these tires for their vehicles. What I want to focus on, though, is this quote that he wrote. So despite all the sickness and setbacks and hardship, even in his ambition, here is what he wrote. The advantages of a career in life should not be estimated exclusively by the standard of dollars and cents, as is too often done. Man has just cause for regret when he sows and no one reaps. So he's not saying, hey, I'm sad because I'm penniless and destitute. No, he's saying that you have regret when you try to do something and you don't get the and someone else doesn't get the benefit from it. So you can see even in this, his unselfish ambition, it's what drove him forward. It's why he has this company named after him 200 or 125 years even after his death. So we see this ambition can be a positive thing. It can be a net good. But again, an example from the book of Genesis, again, of selfish ambition that might be a little strange is the story of the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11. So these people get together and they build this city and they want to build this huge tower, probably more like a ziggurat, which could have been part of the problem. It could have been worship of another god, which may have been part of the issue. But what we know from the story is their motivation for building the tower and why God thwarted their plan. So look at this, Genesis 11, verse 4. Here's their motivation for building this tower. Then they said, "Come, let's build a great city for ourselves, with a tower that reaches into the sky. This will make us famous and keep us from being scattered all over the world." You see, their motivation there was really selfish ambition, which is why I think overtly we can see that God stopped their plan. So there's nothing wrong with ambition, but even in your life, in my life, when we have goals and dreams and desires, what we have to be careful of is to check our motivation and then check the method by which we try to achieve that ambition. So, for instance, we want to ask questions like, am I making this endeavor all about me? Am I really trying to draw attention to myself? Even trying to do a good thing for the wrong reason, even as we looked at last week a little bit, doesn't get the result that we want. We want to ask, do I have an ulterior motive for these actions or this dream or desire? So the truth is, you can do great things, but what we have to ask is, did I use and abuse people along the way? It's fine to climb the social ladder, the professional ladder, but how many fingers did I step on along the way? How many people did I crush to push myself up to where I am now? Ambition is not the issue. It's the selfish ambition that causes these issues. And that's the way the world seems to want to work. It doesn't matter who, everyone's disposable as long as you can achieve your dream. As long as you can do whatever you want, doesn't matter who gets in your way. That's what elbows are for. And so that's what our world says, but that's why the world doesn't work. It's selfish ambition that drives our current modern world, and that's why it doesn't work. So then the third category here of earthly wisdom that we want to avoid, that James says, includes boasting and lying. I'll be very quick on this point. Let's look at both of these quickly. So boasting. So again, our society, our culture encourages us to beat our chests, right? Brag about yourself. Make it all about you. You know, look what I did. Look what I accomplished. Look how independent I am. That's what our culture values in us. Look how capable and valuable I am. Behold the greatness of me. And that it sounds ridiculous, but that's what our modern culture rewards, is that sort of mindset and behavior. So we have to avoid living like the rest of the world if we want to live according to how Jesus wants us to, as James is saying here. And even when you say that, it just, you know, feels kind of gross. Even in sports, they have taunting rules, you know. If you, in basketball, you get a technical foul, the other team gets the ball and free throws because of taunting. It's this boasting that they want to, even in our sports, they want to do that. You get a flag and a 15-yard penalty in football if you stare down the defender that you just truck, you know. It's like everything inside of me wants to let them know I'm better than them, but it's going to cost the team, so I need to kind of lay off that. So the boasting here is what we want to avoid, even though earthly wisdom says, yeah, brag on you, pat yourself on the back, you deserve it. You know, you're the best. You're the, you know, most amazing. It's like we want to try to trim that down and see a better way, which we'll get into a little bit next week when we look at heavenly wisdom. And then lying, he says. So lying in general is wrong. I think we all can agree with that, you know. But what exactly in this context is James talking about here? Well, it's connected with this bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. So there's two ways that I think we see this in our culture. You know, sometimes what we do, and I know that this term is maybe overused, but it applies here. Sometimes we gaslight people, right? So I have crushed people along the way, but no, I really didn't do that. Or yeah, I made it all about me, but no, I really did it for good reasons. Well, you know, no, the evidence shows otherwise. Like the proof of your life shows otherwise. But we do. Our culture is like, no. However you can, whatever you can do to get ahead, do it. Whatever lies you got to tell, do it. Whatever you got to cover up later, do it. And so we want to avoid that mindset. The other way that this happens in our culture is this idea of the ends justifying the means. I think that's a main lie of earthly wisdom. So it's like you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet, right? It's just how it is. And that, yeah, sure, if I'm making an omelet, yes. But if it's like people, then probably I want to avoid that method, you know, of treating people that way. So for instance, it's like, you know, yeah, I lost my family, but I got that promotion. The world would say, good for you. But like James is like, no, that's not how this is designed to go. You know, yeah, I lost my integrity, but I made that big sale. It's like, so what? Or yeah, I'm in mental turmoil and burnout, but I'm rich. Who cares? James is saying, do you see how ridiculous this is? But that's what our culture celebrates and champions. Let me give you a church example for pastors. Pastors might say, yeah, I abused my staff and volunteers, but the church grew. like, ouch, you know? So that's what we want to avoid. So we want to avoid the gaslighting, the ends justifying the means. These things may sound crazy, but you've probably heard things like that. You've probably heard people say these kinds of things. You've seen their personal life is in shambles, but their career's doing great, and they can justify that. And it's like, no, 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 there's an imbalance here, and so we want to avoid this kind of thing. And it's like what Jesus, the older brother of James, said. He said, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his own soul? And what can man give in exchange for his soul? The culture wants to focus on the here and now. That's the main issue. But James is saying, no, there's something bigger. There's something greater. There's something spiritual. There's something long-term that we should aim for. And so we want to avoid this earthly wisdom. We want to avoid this way of the world. And then here's why. Here's why we want to avoid this earthly wisdom. It's because of the last category that James, how he describes it in James 3. He describes earthly wisdom as unspiritual and demonic. So we've seen already that earthly wisdom, you know, seems normal in the outer culture. Life apart from Jesus, yes, it's about you, what you can achieve, what you can do, no matter what's in your way or who's in your way or what it takes to get there, just do it. You know, it's all about you. But it's how you become successful. It's how you get ahead. It's how you avoid being run over or seen as insignificant in your life. But this earthly wisdom is, in fact, unspiritual and demonic. Another way I might describe that is it's dangerous and it's dumb. Earthly wisdom is dangerous and dumb. Let's look at the scripture, 1 Corinthians 2, 6 through 8. Paul here is going to show us why, in fact, earthly wisdom is dangerous and dumb at the same time. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 6 through 8, here's what Paul says. He says, yet when I'm among mature believers, I do speak with words of wisdom, but not the kind of wisdom that belongs to this world or to the rulers of this world who are soon forgotten. No, the wisdom we speak of is the mystery of God, his plan that was previously hidden, even though he made it for our ultimate glory before the world began. But the rulers of this world have not understood it. If they had, they would not have crucified our glorious Lord. So Paul, in agreeing with James here, is saying, do you know what earthly wisdom did? Earthly wisdom murdered Jesus Christ. That's how smart our culture is. That's how in the know our leaders are, is that they would not see what should be obvious to them, and they murder the person they were waiting for. That's why it's dangerous and dumb. So the religious leaders in the days of Jesus had all these elements of earthly wisdom. They were bitterly jealous of his star rising in their community. They were selfishly ambitious about keeping the power to themselves and lording it over the people. They constantly boasted of their accomplishments. They lied and misled the people they were supposed to care for. And it led to murdering not just a good man, not just an innocent man, but a perfect man. And in fact, the Son of God. That's how dangerous earthly wisdom can be. But it's also dumb because these people had been waiting for the one they ended up killing. That's like the definition of dumb to me. So for hundreds of years, these Pharisees, Sadducees, priests, Levites, they'd all been reading the prophecies of Isaiah, Jeremiah, all the Old Testament prophets, and they're talking about the one who will come, the Messiah who will come, the Savior who will come. And guess what? He came in their lifetime in flesh. They could see him, they could touch him, they could hear him, and yet they rejected him anyway. That's how dumb earthly wisdom really is. What you've been waiting for and longing for is right there in front of you, and yet because it didn't come in the way you thought it might, you discard it altogether. It's sort of like this. It's sort of like if I know that you want to go on a dream cruise, and so for Christmas, I got you a ticket to go on your dream cruise. Now, this is not a real scenario, so don't get too excited, okay? This is just for instance, okay? So I bought this ticket for you for your dream cruise, and I put it in a gift bag, and at Christmas, I give you this gift bag. Now, so here's how earthly wisdom works. You tell me the only way that I accept gifts is in a box with a bow. So I'm not going to receive that gift because it's in a bag. And you throw the bag with your dream cruise ticket in the garbage, and then you light it on fire, okay? That's dumb, but that's exactly what earthly wisdom did to Jesus. The gift we've been waiting for and longing for and waiting for hundreds of years is right here in the flesh, ready to, you know, bring us into a new age of his kingdom, and we're going to murder him on a cross. That's earthly wisdom. We don't want to do that. So we remember here that James is saying that's what this earthly wisdom does. Let's look at one more verse. Let's go back to verse 16 of James 3 that we started out. And remember how he ends this section about earthly wisdom. In James 3:16, he says, "For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind." So we know that disorder is obviously counter to God's way. So we know this because even all the way back in Genesis chapter 1, creation is God making order out of chaos. So if you think about the Hebrew thinking, the ancient Hebrews, here's how they would have thought and seen the creation story. So you have in Genesis 1:1-2, that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, but it was void and formless and dark. Okay, so they're seeing that as sort of God building the structure of the universe, but it's still considered chaos. It's chaotic. So then the days of creation is God filling in this chaos and bringing order to it. So that's how they would have seen this idea here with this idea of disorder. So we know that God is a God of order. He says also in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians 14, God is a God of order and peace. So even in that context, he's talking about the way that church gatherings are structured. It can't be chaotic. It can't be a free-for-all. The Spirit's not going to move that way because God doesn't work that way. There's disorder that comes from earthly wisdom, but it is not God's way. I do like, though, how the King James Version, they translate this word disorder as confusion. And I think that's really where earthly wisdom leads us to, is confusion. Earthly wisdom, the problem is that there's no defined standard of morality with earthly wisdom. So it does become a free-for-all culturally, societally, morally. I don't have to conform to societal norms because there are none. Who makes the rules? I guess I make the rules for me and you make the rules for you. What does that lead to? It leads to confusion and disorder. And that selfish ambition comes in, is like, I don't really care what God says his rules are because I'm abiding by my own rules, and so I'm going to just do what I want. It causes disorder and confusion. And as James says, it leads to evil of every kind. So it's easy to see, why does our culture call good evil and evil good apart from Christ? Because earthly wisdom leads to disorder, confusion, and evil. Why do we see crime on the rise in different pockets of our country all the time? Because earthly wisdom leads to disorder, confusion, and evil. Why do we have an entire generation of young people who are so sexually confused? It's because earthly wisdom leads to disorder, confusion, and evil. Why do we seem so divided more than ever as a society? Because earthly wisdom leads to disorder, confusion, and evil. The way of the world doesn't work. The wisdom of the world doesn't work because it's not true wisdom. So we will see next week what the kind of wisdom that does work, what it looks like, how it's described in this same section. We'll break that down as well. But let me close with this. Even if we, you know, like, what is that? I've got to wait till next week to know what to do here. No, you don't. Because here's the thing, even if you don't know what God's wisdom is, James has already told us in chapter 1 what to do if we lack wisdom. Look at it. James 1 verse 5, "If you need wisdom, ask our generous God and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking." So even though we haven't covered the positive aspects of heavenly wisdom yet, you can even this week ask God for wisdom in your everyday life and he will generously give it to you. So you can say, you know what, God, maybe I do feel some jealousy creeping into my heart. Help me. That's wisdom. God will help you. Maybe you ask, you know, am I using others as tools to feed my own ambition? God, help me. That's wisdom. Maybe you would say, you know what, I've tried to justify maybe some of this worldly, earthly wisdom, but God, I know there's a better way. Help me. That's wisdom. Maybe you would say, I've tried to do it my own way for a long time, and here I am, worse off than ever. God, I need a better way. That's wisdom. If we try to operate the way the world works, we're going to get their results, and that's not what we want. So as we'll see again in detail next week, so we'll be back here for kind of part two of this mini-series, I guess. We'll talk about what heavenly wisdom looks like and why it's so useful and helpful. But even when you don't know what to do, you can know to ask God for wisdom, and he will give it to you. In any situation that you face, in every relationship that you're in, everything that that happens at work, at home, out in town, wherever, whoever, whenever, God will give you the wisdom that you need, his wisdom, to avoid this earthly wisdom. This is the way, and this is the wisdom that works. Let's close today and pray. God, our prayer is to avoid this earthly wisdom. to avoid this jealousy that competes, to avoid that makes us bitter, to avoid selfishness that pushes people down, to avoid lying and boasting about it's all about me and it's not about them, to justify, again, this unhelpful, unhealthy, demonic way of living as James describes it. It's not what you want. So God, help us to understand that this earthly wisdom leads to emptiness, and it cannot be the way that we operate as followers of Jesus. You offer a better way, and so we want to choose that better way. And so we ask for your wisdom to reign in us and to reign over us and to really reign us in, to help us to get out of our own way at certain times and certain seasons of life. God, we need your wisdom. We know the world pulls us so strongly in these negative, destructive ways, but help us to pull closer to you, to lean into you, to ask you for your wisdom, and you will give it. We thank you that you give us wisdom generously and liberally when we ask, and so we lean into that today and say, Jesus, help me. Jesus, be with me. Go before me and beside me and give me all that I need to live the kind of life you want me to live through your help, your spirit, and your wisdom. I thank you for all those here today. Give us a great rest of our weekend and bring us back next time ready for more of you. In Jesus' name, amen.